Welcome to Yacht Crew Vlogs, where we tell the stories of those in the yachting industry. A behind-the-scenes look that discovers the individuals in the industry, their history, their passions, and what inspires them to do what they do. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Christian Fraunhofer. She is the president of Sea Tow Services International in the U.S. How are you, Kristen?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
I managed to get connected with you through a mutual acquaintance. Mm-hmm. And I took a look at your company. It is huge. Huge.
We have grown quite a bit since we started. We now service the entire United States and Puerto Rico. Alaska is one of our largest growing franchises right now. And we do have Sea Tow in Europe, in Croatia. They operate independently. Sea Tow in Europe can take care of you as well, as a whole separate organization.
Nice.
The master license to that area. So you might see our yellow boats over there too.
We'll get into that a little bit. I got to tell you, on the side, they've got the cutest boats, tow boats, actually. They're absolutely amazing, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay. Tell me about you. Tell me about, you know, what did you want to be when you were growing up? Now you're president of this company that your father started back in 1983. But I'm sure when you were like, you know, 5 or 10 years old, you weren't planning on being the president of Sea Tow.
I was not. Actually, I have to say, I grew up, my father was always an entrepreneur, but he was also a teacher. Okay. And my mother was a teacher. So I grew up in that environment, always liked, you know, when I was 5, I was that kid playing with like the chalkboard and, you know, being a teacher. But then somewhere along the way, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. And then I wanted to study international business, and then I wanted to be a lawyer again, and then somehow I ended up being a teacher. You know, we had multiple family businesses growing up. Sea Tow was just one of them. So I got a lot of experience doing a variety of different things. We had a lighting store, we had a Hallmark store, we had a gift store. My father was a licensed electrician. We sold light bars. And then he started Sea Tow. So I grew up working for my parents. So I kind of knew that after I graduated college, I wanted to go off and do my own thing.
Right.
And I decided very early on in college, I did not want to be an attorney. It was not the profession for me. But I did really enjoy teaching, and I enjoyed languages. So I was actually a Spanish major. I ended up teaching middle school and high school Spanish and a little bit of French and reading for about 10 years. Moved out of our small town, kind of had to do my thing. And over the summers, I worked for Sea Tow. Still, you know, worked on the call center over the summers and did some work remotely for them at the time, but really had to go sort of do my own thing.
Yeah,
but always knew I'd eventually come back. And my brother kind of did the same thing. He went off and did his thing. He was a captain, first mate on cargo ships for 10 years. And both of us came back in 2002 and 2003. So I've been back full time at Sea Tow since 2003 and kind of continued to work my way through every position. So I've done everything here at this company, from stuff envelopes to put together boxes to do the shipping and receiving, work in the call center extensively, to then I started getting more involved in like our membership program and our marketing and PR and communications, which then led me to be more involved with our technology and finance, and just really kind of learned how to do everything along the way, so that we were in a position when my father passed away about 7 years ago, that my brother and I could officially take over the company. So we had a whole succession plan in place, and we had made sure we, you know, learned everything along the way. And my brother and I have very different skill sets, and we're very respectful of each other's skill sets and make a perfect team running the company. And now I president of CETO, and I still work very closely. I spend a lot of time on my technology development. Work very closely with our tech team, our marketing team, PR, communications, all the internal operations sort of fall in my purview. And that's what I do, programs and a lot of business development as well.
Wow. You're busy.
I'd like to stay busy. Yeah. I get bored otherwise. You know, I like to stay busy. We're 24/7 company. So, you know, our whole team is available 24/7. So we're all just kind of used to it. You just keep going and you just work and you work hard, but we also really enjoy working with each other. And I think that's key when you have a fantastic team of people that you all enjoy working together, working hard and working long hours to make things happen isn't a burden to anyone because we have such a great group.
How big was the company when you joined it back in 2002, 2003?
Not huge. So while my father is the one who started the business back in 1983, he saw the opportunity when the Coast Guard decided they were no longer in assisted non-emergency situations. And with that, he sort of built out and had this whole vision. And we started as a licensing. So we licensed the trademarks. We had other I call them franchise owners now, but other CETO owners throughout the country who during the 80s and 90s joined us and really were a significant part of building the brand. Mm-hmm. My father made some critical business decisions in the mid 90s that led us to switching to to really experiencing dramatic growth from 95 to 2000 and then switching business models a little bit to give our franchise owners more security in their business and switch to the full franchise model versus franchise is a license, but they have franchise agreements, gave them more security in the business. And we just sort of started skyrocketing from there. The 2000s, like the early 2000s were a period of tremendous growth for us with opening, you know, dozens of new franchise locations, membership growth, you know, exponentially. So I think I don't even know how to answer that question properly because it's really, you know, from a membership standpoint, it was not where we are now, but we've experienced tremendous growth in the past, you know, two decades, and really built out our network of franchise owners, and our membership just continues to grow despite any downturns in the economy or anything else. People keep boating and we're there to help them.
Well, and I can imagine over the pandemic, I mean, I was following the news reports and the information, of course, on boating and yachting and the maritime industry. The States blew up. I mean, blew up with boating.
Oh my, it was incredible. I think all of us, you know, sort of in March of 2020, believe it or not, our little town on the North Fork of Long Island was one of the first COVID hotspots in the country. And we ended up having to transition our entire office from work in the office to work at home in under 48 hours. Amazing. I accomplished it though. I did it. we did it, including our 24/7 call center. We actually transitioned a whole 24/7 call center to work from home in under 48 hours. And I think, you know, the whole marine industry in the US was kind of really holding their breath in March because no one knew what was going on. And you saw March and April and boating was getting shut down. In certain areas, you can't go out in your boat. You can't go to the ramp. You can't do this. And all of us, you know, meanwhile, all of us are in the marine industry are like, but boating is the perfect thing. You can do it with your family out on the water. You can still maintain your bubble. And I think eventually that was realized. Everyone in the marine industry was holding their breath. And then all of a sudden, mid-April, the floodgates opened. And I will, you know, I like to take a little, I'm going to take a little bit of credit for us at CETO here. We're one of the first people to really talk about social distancing while boating and put out an infographic and put out information to help, you know, talk to people about how can you social distance while boating? How can you make this a successful and safe activity? And really gave the industry some tools to put out there. And I, you know, I'd like to feel like we were a part of that, of getting people out, doing something that was just good for their mental health with everything going on. I mean, we all know boating is just, it's that release. Your blood pressure goes down, and it was something they could still do with their families and escape a little bit. And for us, 2020, every day was Saturday.
Nice.
Our franchise owners, their local captains, their teams worked so hard to be on the water every day to support boaters. And every day was Saturday. It was absolutely insane. The amount of volume between April, you know, and the end of the year. And it continued right into 2021.
Well, you guys got into a position over there that you couldn't even build boats. You couldn't even buy boats because
it's still a challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still a challenge. Manufacturers in our industry, I give them a lot of credit for trying to figure out how to just keep going when they couldn't have people working in the factories, how they can't get parts, they can't get supplies with the supply chain so messed up. I mean, there's still a backlog of boat building out there when engines, it's getting better. But the industry as a whole has worked really, really hard to really try to be there and let people enjoy boating and get them out there on the water. And I think overall the industry is doing a good job.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the education aspect of it, because that is something that your father set up back in 2007. So it wasn't something that just sort of, you know, oh, let's do this. This is something that is part of your company's fabric, is the education and the safety. Tell us a little bit about the foundation.
Sure. So back in 2007, as you said, my father started the CETO Foundation, and it is a separate 501c3 not-for-profit entity, of which I'm also president of that board of directors. I'm intimately involved in that too. But he really got so frustrated with seeing the number of accidents that our captains were responding to, not because they're required to, but because they're on the water so much, they're often closest. So when there is a true emergency, an accident on the water, and the Coast Guard puts out, you know, Pan or Securite or Mayday, whatever it is in that area, our captains are often the closest. So they're going to respond as mariners and, you know, good Samaritans to see if they can assist those boaters. And it's very frustrating each year when we see the number of accidents that could have been prevented with simple changes, you know, and things do go wrong and accidents happen. But, you know, the number of people drowning, because if they just would have been wearing a life jacket while that boat was underway, they wouldn't have drowned, you know, and you know, the number of people who somehow have a designated driver heading to the water, but as soon as they get out on the water, that concept goes away, you know. Yeah. So we're big proponents at the foundation of having a sober skipper, designate someone who's going to be responsible for everyone on board. We know people are going to pack their cooler and go out on the boat, but you know, if you have someone who is responsible, just like you'd have a designated driver on land, have that designated sober skipper on water. And these were things we were seeing over and over again. And my father just got frustrated and said, we have to do something about this, and started the CETO Foundation. And we now run what should be this year, after this year, when we finally get our life jackets, which are delayed at the moment. Once those go out there, we should be the largest life jacket loaner program in the United States.
Wow.
Across all 50 states and multiple territories, with over 1,000 life jacket loaner stations in place. We're at about 950 right now. And we lend the life jacket loaner program, makes life jackets available. So if you're taking guests out on the boat and you need extra life jackets for the day, just borrow them and return them. You know, take another family out on the boat, make sure the kids have life jackets, borrow and return them. And it's amazing how honest people are that they borrow and return them. You know, it's a fantastic thing. And we run our Sober Skipper program for the country, and really try to encourage that piece out there. We try to educate on the use of electronic flares. It's a big one this year. There's no way to dispose of flares very easily, old-fashioned flares, something else we're working on, but we're, trying to talk about those alternatives out there, and we have educational materials out there all the time. Our foundation's constantly reaching out with, here's another opportunity for you to learn. We promote the tremendous safe boating courses that are out there that other organizations produce. Why reinvent the wheel when there's fantastic options out there already? And we can, work with them to help improve education. So that's, we're just really trying to keep encouraging, and you'll see it even within the CTO, our CTO members are constantly getting emails from us about, like, here's a couple of things you can do just to have a safe and fun day on the water. It's about responsible boating. It's, we want everyone to go have fun. We don't want to be those people going, you need to do this. No, you need to go have fun on the water, but just be responsible about it.
I think the one thing that sort of strikes a chord with me is this Sober Skipper program. We see it in yachting as well. I don't know why, but, for years upon years, we have really as a society clamped down on drink driving because the ability to kill another as well as yourself. Now, I think the danger is even worse on the water, because not only do you have the danger of killing somebody else, you've got the danger of killing yourself and everybody on board drowning. I mean, and I think everybody tends to forget, that you're still operating heavy machinery, as it were. You know, just because you're out on the lake with your buddies having, having a couple of brewskis and fishing, it doesn't mean that you aren't operating heavy machinery and you have to be responsible.
Absolutely. And you're doing it in a variable environment. You can't, boats don't stop on a dime. There's waves, there's sun, there's the motion of the boat. All of these things exacerbate the effect of alcohol. And, I go out on my boat, there's a cooler, it's packed. Not going to say there's not some alcohol in there, but we have someone who's not going to be drinking while we're out that day. And we have someone who, and we also are very responsible about who's drinking, how much, who's monitoring them. You can go have it, it's part of the culture of boating. Let's face it, that cooler packed with beer is just part of the culture of boating, because boating is that release, that fun we were talking about. It's that escape. There's nothing, it obviously, if there were no alcohol involved in boating and everyone on board the boat did not drink at all, or we'll say do drugs of any kind, with marijuana being legal in so many states now in the United States, it would be safer. It would be safer across the board, but it's also not the reality of what's going to happen. People want freedom and release. Yeah. So to have someone who's going to monitor what's going on. You don't need to go out and get drunk on the boat. You can go out and have, a beer or two while you're at anchor. You can, enjoy your day with everyone. And just realize that, again, that the sun, the vibrations of the boat, that it's going to actually affect you even more. And you might not realize how you're feeling because the boat is moving and you are operating very heavy equipment.
Yeah.
You are operating, something that could injure someone else, kill someone else, that you can't necessarily turn on a dime, stop on a dime. And quite frankly, you might, if someone's operating the boat when they're intoxicated or under the influence of drugs, and that, boating under the influence, just like driving under the influence is boating under the influence of BUI, even running aground suddenly could injure passengers on the boat. It might not involve anyone else. So we really just encourage everyone to just be, again, it comes down to being responsible. You're responsible on the road. If you would designate a driver on land, just designate a driver on the boat too. Designate that sober skipper.
It's a good idea.
Have a good day. Go have fun. Go enjoy. That's the whole point. You want that release and go enjoy boating.
Well, and I think too, there's a difference between boating and yachting in the fact that smaller boats tend to, with one or two motors, they tend to be in areas that there could possibly be swimmers. The large super yachts like that, they can't get into those areas, generally speaking. Not that we haven't had accidents of the same sort, the tenders, etc. But you know, all it takes is a wave to hide the head of a kid, you know, and you don't see that kid.
Absolutely. You know,
and that can happen sober.
So, and I, you know, it's interesting you talk about like yachting versus, you know, there's yachting and there's, I'll call it recreational boating.
Yeah.
And I actually boat in an area where both are true. Cause I'm on the North Fork of Long Island, where we're out near the Hamptons. So we have, I'm usually anchored next to like, you know, 150-foot yacht. Like they're just all in the same cove. I mean, it's not abnormal for that to happen.
Right.
Where we are. And that leads to the other issue of the yacht wakes versus the smaller boat wakes, and trying to be cautious of your environment around you. Because you don't know what's going to happen, and you can't necessarily see everything. So you want to be very careful. And this goes to whether, even if everyone on the boat is completely sober and no one is drinking, just being cautious of your environment and, you know, operating at a safe speed where you can make sure that you have, you know, and have another lookout who's also seeing what else is out there. You know, there's a lot of small things people can do that greatly improve the experience. And I think, you know, we do find that, believe it or not, inland lakes and rivers are actually where the largest percentage of accidents are caused, where alcohol is the primary contributing factor, especially with men between like 25 and 55.
I shouldn't giggle, but I know. I mean, you know, I grew up in Terrace, British Columbia, Canada. And, you know, everybody fished. It was rivers, it was lakes. And it was literally, you know, the guys would go out and, you know, everybody, but it would be a competition. Who could drink the most and who could go the fastest and who could show off the best and who could, you know, catch the most fish.
And it was just fun. And it's, I think it's just about our being responsible, because there's other things, you know, whether it's even just watching your wake on the water and being cautious of, you know, if there's someone paddleboarding over there, is your wake going to, you know, potentially throw them off the paddleboard or flip them in the kayak? We all share the waterways. So it's really just being conscious of your total environment around you, whether you're on a personal watercraft, you know, you're on a yacht for the day and you're on a personal watercraft, you know, watching what you're doing to, you know, someone out in their 24-foot center console, you know, to be cautious of what's going on there, to someone out in their, you know, 40, 50-foot cruising boat. It's being aware of how your boat affects everyone around you and really just trying to be courteous. Now, education would help if everyone knew the rules of the water and the rules of the road. So we always, you know, we're big proponents of take that educational boating safety course, whether it's an online course or an in-person class, even better, and a hands-on course, even more fantastic. To just know how everyone should be on the water together so we can all go out and just have a fantastic time, because it is such a tremendous relief.
Yeah, I agree completely. You know, taking that safety aspect further, you guys took another step back in 2019 and you created the National Boating Industry Safety Awards. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yep. So the CETOF, and that is the CETOF Foundation effort. And at the same time, we also created the CETOF Foundation Advisory Council, which is made up of representatives from the marine retail industry. And whether it's manufacturers to marine press to accessories manufacturers and some other boating safety organizations and that group all worked together to create the National Boating Industry Safety Awards to recognize those for-profit marine entities that are promoting safe and responsible boating and putting efforts out there. And we've been able to recognize companies for doing that, because there always was the stigma of, we can't talk about boating safety and what could go wrong on the water because that's just bad. Well, no, if we talk about having safe, responsible boating, there'll be less accidents, which shows what, and we're not going to hear about those on the news, because we should be hearing about the fantastic experiences that families have had on the water and the bonding they've had with their kids and that time together with the guys going out fishing. And those are the moments you want to be able to talk about, not the accidents. So we've you know, companies such as Marine Max and Freedom Boat Club and Sea Ray have really taken a stance and been out there saying, we're going to talk about this and we're going to put this out there just as part of our communications. And those are just some of our past award winners to be able to recognize their efforts to not only talk about the fun, you know, talk about the fun of boating, but also talk about how you have fun responsibly. And that's been a great thing to be able to recognize companies for contributing to the conversation.
Well, you guys also have a different sort of setup with your company as well. And just to describe to the viewers a little bit, in the research that I found, like I sort of liken this to, you know, you're driving in your car, you're going down the road and, you know, you get a flat tire or something goes wrong with your engine. You pull over, you call AAA, I guess, in the States, right? Yeah, same idea. And so they come out and they pick you up 10 hours later. And then you get back to the garage and they charge you 10,000 euros or dollars, as it were. I know I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you guys don't operate that way. You know, it's like a membership. Like you,
absolutely,
you get to come on board with CETO. You know, you also cover, like you're able to help them with the insurance. It's a membership. So, you know, whether you have an old boat that happens to break down 20 times a month, or you just don't know how to operate it, the fact is it's still going to cost you the same as if you have a brand new boat and, you know, you never break down. Just because it is that membership type concept.
Absolutely. So one of the things my father knew early on was we wanted to sort of emulate that AAA model. Right. So, you know, one of our trademarks actually is your road service at sea. Yeah. So as a boater, you can join CETO. In the United States, we have our gold card membership and our late card membership for recreational boaters. For the gold cards, only $199 a year. Our late cards, only $119 a year. And with that membership, we provide service for any boat you own and anyone operating them. So if you have, you know, let's say you have a 24-foot center console and you have two personal watercraft, that one membership will cover all of them.
Wow.
And anyone operating them. And then the member themselves will provide service if they go on vacation and rent a boat. And they have care, custody, and control of the boat. If they borrow a friend's boat and the owner's not on board. So as long as the owner's not on board, we'll cover the member on other boats they're operating. But they can't be a guest. Then the boat owner needs to have their own membership.
Right.
It's only $199 a year. And, you know, obviously not everyone's going to use that every year, just like you wouldn't necessarily use your AAA membership every year for on-water assistance. But we do also have our CETO Savings Club. You're getting all member communications, and our captains are a great local resource. So with that, you know, we have a lot of members who cruise up and down the coast, and they'll call the CETO captains on the way and say, hey, where should I go dock? Or where should I go get the restaurant? Where should I anchor up for the day? Hey, can you help me get through this, you know, challenging inlet? And our captains become that local resource, your friend in every port also. And then, you know, but obviously if you're not a CETO member, we'll still assist you on the water. You can still call us for help. Our local franchise and their captains will respond, and you're going to pay hourly rates. Right. But we'll quote, you know, we'll tell you it's going to be, you know, $350, $400 an hour from the time we leave dock to the time we get back. It is not an inexpensive proposition. Within the industry, whether it's us or anyone else in the industry, the average on-water assistance case ranges between $850 to $1,000 per incident. But if you're a member, that's probably going to be covered under your membership services.
That's crazy different, eh?
Yeah, so, I mean, and we do respond, you know, we talk about how long it takes to respond. Last year, our average response time, even with the craziness of boating and the number of people on the water, the average response time for our franchisees was just under an hour last year from the time you call to the time we're on sea, which when you think about a marine environment and, you know, getting from point A to point B and no wake zones and everything else, you know, being on scene in less than an hour is really incredible. And our franchise owners do that by having boats stationed in multiple spots within their service areas, having captains on duty 24/7. We're there to help people. We stay in communication with people and make sure that we can work to get them home safe and get them to the repair facility or get them to the trailer ramp and go from there.
I have to say, I was taking a look at the boats that you use, and I just love them. I recommend everybody go to the site and check out these boats. They're bright yellow. And as I was saying to Kristen before we went on air, I don't know if I was like on the side of the highway and, you know, my car had just blown up and I saw this bright yellow cute thing come up to me to help me, I don't, it would just make me happy. And on the, you know, obviously on the water, having it that color and, you know, it's very, you know, compact, is perfect, but they make you happy. They're cute.
Absolutely. You know, we service mostly recreational boaters. So our membership provides service for vessels up to 65 feet, more or less. I will say for yachting, however, there are multiple of our franchise owners who have the capabilities to handle vessels over 65 feet. So I do want to say that specifically, I know Fort Lauderdale and Palm Beach areas, Miami areas, they're regularly dealing with yachts.
What is the largest yacht that they can deal with?
It really depends upon the yacht itself, so I can't say specifically because it'll depend upon the capabilities of that local franchise. Sometimes it might just be using two Sea-Tow towboats. It might be, you know, depends upon the structure of that yacht, where you're going, what the issue is. You know, but they'll, and it's a different ball game when you're getting into yachting. But they often assist, so I don't want to say that. It might not be covered under membership, but our franchises have a lot of capabilities of what they can do locally.
I think when you get to have a $500 million yacht, you know, paying a few thousand is not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, and again, it depends what the need is. We often work with a lot of yacht captains to service their tenders as well, and make sure that's taken care of. But we mostly focus on the recreational boating market. You know, vessels under 65 feet, the vast majority of our members have boats 45 feet and less. And we're servicing them with our, you know, that we like to say they're very distinctive on the water. So we have our distinctive yellow towboats. We're the only ones who can have boats on the water that are yellow, servicing people. That is something that we have a federal decision that yellow is CETOS, nice. Along with all of our trademarks. So, you know, when you see that yellow boat coming to you, I think it's like you said, we have a lot of members say, oh, I just felt so much relief that, you know, the CETO captain's showing up in their yellow towboat, you know, and we like yellow. We do think it's fun. It's happy, right?
It is. Yellow is daisies, and it's a happy color. It really is. It'd be different if it was red. Like, red is almost an angry color, but, you know, yellow is definitely something that, I don't know, puts you at ease. Do you get sort of an idea? Do you get statistics from all of your franchisees from around the states of the areas that tend to be a little bit more dangerous?
We do know where all of our cases are. We utilize one network-wide dispatch system, so we do know where all the cases are. And each area, it's going to vary. In some cases, it's going to be, you know, hey, there's a rock pile. You know, I think of where I'm in Sag Harbor, there's a rock pile and too many, like, even though it's marked, too many people run up on it every year. you know, some cases it's, you know, rough inlets. Other cases it's sandbars and then the tide goes out. You know, again, 99.9% of what we do are not emergency cases. Yeah. It's someone ran aground, they need a battery jump, they need fuel delivery, they had a mechanical issue and they need a tow home, they got something tangled in their prop. That's 99% of what we're handling on a daily basis from an on-water assistance standpoint. Other than that, our franchises also do have the capabilities to do salvage and recovery work, whether if your boat's sunk, on fire, taking on water. We do a lot of response after catastrophic storms as well, after hurricane cleanup and everything else. So if it happens on the water and someone needs help, generally speaking, our captains can do it.
That's amazing. Well, and you also have, like, I noticed you have your home bases on your sort of service stations, and you also have patrols. So do you have boats that are going around just seeing if there's, or in the area to see if there's any trouble, or checking out the water to make sure everything's okay?
Absolutely. And that's one reason we put our patrolling locations on the website as well. Our captains, they don't just sit at the dock. And that's, I think, key is, you know, on a holiday weekend or on a weekend, you're going to find the Sea-Tow boat out at that popular spot. I think of Sea-Tow Fort Lauderdale. Every time I'm down in Fort Lauderdale area and I'm driving over, there's the boat. And I see the Sea-Tow boat sitting right at Hillsborough Inlet because they know they're going to get a call in that area and they're there to help boaters. And they also will help boaters get through the inlet, which is challenging. We'd actually, you know, we'd help again. Our mission is to help people enjoy boating. If we can help them get through the inlet and enjoy their day on the water, it's a much better scenario than the boat flipping as it's going through the inlet.
Yeah.
You know, so we're there to help. But our captains are routinely out and about in those high traffic areas to be available to assist as quickly as possible. That's one of the reasons we have such a low response time on average, because our captains are out and about and ready to respond at a moment's notice.
Well, let me ask you, there seems to be, taking a look through Facebook and all social media, there seems to be a large problem in Miami a lot of the times with captains being not necessarily captains, or I think they call them cowboys or something. Do you find that there's incidences of just, you know, irresponsible behavior in Miami more so than anywhere else?
I'm going to say no, not just in Miami more so. I think it's just more promoted. Right. We've all seen those video cams of all over Inlet. You know, we can all watch. There's a lot of social media around of all the inlets down in South Florida. Yeah. So I think it makes it seem like there's more craziness and, like, call, you know, that cowboy behavior on the water. But I think it's pretty consistent across the board.
Yeah.
Just not necessarily as promoted.
Right. Well, I guess, you know, it's more, you know, you're talking about a cowboy in Miami as opposed to, you know, I don't know, somebody in New Hampshire. It doesn't have the same vibe, I don't think.
I don't think it might not have the same vibe, but I think, you know, just, I think it also potentially gives boaters in, you know, we'll call it like that Miami or South, you know, Florida area. It also potentially gives them a bad name.
Yeah.
Because there are so many responsible boaters, and, you know, you're not, this is one of those pieces of, you know, social media of, it's putting out there like, oh, look at this crazy thing that happened, or look at what went wrong here, or whatever else. There's a lot going right. There's a lot of people who are very responsible on the water who are doing the right things. And, you know, we need to learn from what's not going right. And I think, you know, I think this is just a big, like, social media piece of like, oh, it always has to focus on what's going wrong and highlight that and promote that because it'll go viral.
Yeah,
it doesn't give the full picture. Right. And I wouldn't give anyone in any particular part of the country a bad name for their boating skills, because I think it's a small percentage of people in every region of the country.
Well, who wants to read the good stories, right? It doesn't matter whether it's boating or anything else. I think, you know, everybody, and I've noticed, you know, with social media lately, of course, in yachting, it is the seizures of yachts and the different things that go on, and all of a sudden it's just a big deal. But otherwise, I mean, you know, myself being a Canadian before I ever moved to Europe, I'd never heard of yachting. But now the entire universe has heard of yachting just because of this situation. So when there's something scandalous going on, people like to talk about it, obviously. So
exactly. Whether it's scandalous or just it's, you know, again, we always want to look at what's going wrong. And I think there's a lot of people who always want to, you know, they want to pick on someone else or laugh at someone else. Yeah. And I wish we could focus more on the fantastic things that go on. You know, that's what you'll see from us. The, you know, even like the imagery we use in our advertising and our social media is really focusing on the joys of boating and, you know, families being out there, those connections you're building, the, you know, that break from everything and that break from time. And no one, people can use that so much right now. That, yeah. You know, the last 2 years have been so stressful for everyone. You know, that's why boating has really grown so much as a sport, is people are, you know, whether they're in a kayak, they're on a paddleboard, they have a personal watercraft, or they've purchased a small boat for the first time, they're realizing the tremendous impact it can have on their mental health, on their family relationships, And hopefully that continues and we don't lose people out of boating as we're coming out of the pandemic, maybe.
Well, I think the thing is, too, is that generally speaking, when you're on a boat, you can't get social media and you can't get the internet. So you are bound to talk to each other and you are bound to interact with each other. I know that is changing now.
It is changing.
Yeah, very fast.
And most people in the United States, believe it or not, actually boat within about 3 miles of shore. So they're either on an inland lake or river or they're boating pretty near shore. And, you know, you do obviously get offshore fishermen and we're getting, you know, people who do travel, especially like the Bahamas is a very popular destination for many of our members. But, you know, you really are, people do have that. But I even see with my niece and nephew, all of a sudden their devices go away and they're out swimming and they're out, you know, like, oh, daddy, can we go take a ride to the beach? Can we, you know, and I see them doing that and they're experiencing it and they're getting involved with the family because it's boating so much more interesting to them that it's okay to put the devices away and not play the game right now.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, it's good. It's good. It's almost like taking us back, you know, 20 years to a different time, because we do definitely live in a different time now than, you know, when I was growing up or you were growing up. I remember spending, you know, summers in the campground and, you know, prior to the internet.
Absolutely. But, yes, you know, I do remember a time before the internet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, you had the phone that was attached to the wall. And I remember, you know, talking to the boyfriend when I was a child. Now I'm giving away my age, but you know, you like twirling the cord, right? You couldn't move from the wall. And now it's just, I mean, everywhere they go, there's games, there's this, there's that. And there's just, there is something free about boating, I think. There's something about the wind in your hair, the sun on your face, and the spray of the water as you fly through the waves. It just, I don't know, it just makes you feel refreshed, I think.
Absolutely, you know, and I'm obviously a coastal boater living here in Long Island, New York, but, you know, it's, you might not get that same spray and waves on some inland locations, but you're getting the sandbar, you're getting the raft up, getting that community, and that is one thing that's always amazed me about boating, is it's a community.
Yeah.
You can walk down that dock, and everyone there is your friend, because yeah. They're a boater. Everyone's going to help each other. Everyone, you know, you can do a raft up and there could be 20 people there you don't know, and they're inviting it over to have like some snacks and appetizers on their boat, because boating is a community. Yeah. And it's nice to see that, because we don't have all those same connections, and you can meet some tremendous people. And especially in the United States now, there's so many new ways to get into boating, even if you don't want to own your own boat. I mean, we've seen the boat clubs in the United States grow tremendously in the past 5 years. Yeah. And obviously they're growing in Europe as well. There's tremendous growth of different boat clubs in Europe also. But you know, someone who's like, I want to try it, will join a boat club and yeah. use their fleet of boats and see if you like it. And you can always buy a boat later, or you can stick with the boat club. You don't have to own a boat to enjoy boating anymore.
Well, I think the next generation of boaters too, you know, we're talking about more of an Airbnb generation, an Uber generation, and that fits perfectly in with Absolutely. Their sort of concept of it. They don't have to look after it. They don't have to do the maintenance on it. They don't have to do anything on it. They just mark in their time and off they go. They enjoy it. And then they bring it back, and somebody else has to deal with it.
Yeah. And the nice part is the boat, you know, I've been very impressed with a lot of the boat clubs in the United States, who they also make it a tremendous point to do education. They're not just going to, it's not like you're just renting a boat and it's here's the key and go out. It's a, we're going to take you out on the boat. We're going to teach you how to use the boat. We're going to teach you the rules of the road. You know, I spoke earlier, Freedom Boat Club, because they actually implemented our Sober Skipper program. Every time someone checks out, they literally ask, who's the sober skipper on this trip? You know, and that's, you know, I think that's a tremendous advantage too, because they're not only bringing people into boating, but they're bringing responsible boaters in.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's many boat clubs beyond Freedom Boat Club who are doing a tremendous job in the United States of making that happen, whether they're an independent boat club or a franchise model.
What's next for Sito?
Oh my God. you know, so much. We're going to continue to expand our footprint within the United States. We're always looking to, you know, bring in some great new franchise owners and expand that footprint to be able to service more and more areas, especially our inland lakes and rivers. Our membership just continues to grow. We're looking at more ways for how do we service our members and give them the benefits of what they need on the water, as well as off the water, to help them enjoy boating and get out there. You know, we're going to continue to build out our team here in the United States, even our corporate headquarters. We just opened a satellite call center, actually, down near Tampa last month.
Congratulations. So,
thank you. We really wanted to be in that Florida market, which is one of our largest markets, and have redundancy between our New York and Florida locations. So if there's bad weather one place or the other, those call centers can each take over for each other. So we've expanded that capability to better service our members and have two operational call centers all working off the same call queue at the same time in two different locations. And we're very excited because we're building out that Tampa team right now. They're doing a tremendous job down there. It's fabulous to have them on board. And we're, you know, just keep going and growing. We take each day, we continue to build out our partnerships and relationships to include Sito memberships with new boat purchases, with used boat purchases, larger partnerships with some of the boat clubs out there as well. So it's just, you know, we're all about continued growth and what partnerships that make sense and relationships to work with others that make sense. And obviously continuing to build out our Sito Foundation as well on that not-for-profit and boating education side. I'm very excited that we should Jacket Loaner Station in operation. Those are currently operating, those stands, yeah, in the United States in the next 3 months. And that we can just give back to the boating community. They give so much to us. And I apologize, the train is going by.
That's okay. Do you have any plans on expanding past the U.S. border? I mean, you know, you've got Canada on your doorstep there. You've got Mexico on the other side. And, you know, Europe is over here.
So we do actually have a master license to someone in Europe. So Sito Europe does operate independently.
Right.
So you can find all the Sito operates mostly in Croatia.
Yeah,
at this point, but you can find our yellow Sito boats on the water in Europe as well, and they'll continue expanding as, you know, they feel necessary in Europe. Within the United States, you know, I think the Mexico is an interesting one. It depends how much recreational boating there is. When you're in a market where there's a lot of commercial boating and commercial yachts, it's a little bit harder to expand only because you don't have that same volume of recreational boating that you do in the United States. The United States is a very unique entity in that so many people own personal boats because of tremendous access we have to the water here, whether it's freshwater or saltwater.
Is Canada not quite similar to the United States when it comes to boat ownership?
We do provide service to members in Canada as well. We have quite a few Canadian members that if they call us for assistance, we can certainly arrange for assistance for them there.
Nice. Well, it seems like you're taking over the world. You got it all sorted out.
We try. and you know, it goes to having a good team. We have a tremendous team here at Sito International, and obviously our franchise locations and all of their local teams just do a tremendous job. And the nice part of our business model is that our franchises are in this. They are local captains, and our local teams live, eat, and breathe Sito. We say they bleed yellow, yeah, because they do. This is a passion for them. This isn't a job. This is a passion. They love boating. They love boaters. And they're in this for the long haul. This isn't a, I'm going to be here for a couple of years. We have, you know, two of our longest franchise owners just sold in the past 2 years after 35 years. We are currently our Sito Central Connecticut franchise. He's been with us for over 30 years. You know, we have multiple franchise owners that are in that 20 years, 30 years category because they have a real passion for it. And I don't know that you always find that anymore with people, but our captains are all about it and just want to help people on the water.
You know, that's really depressing for me, because when you say it was started in 1983 and then you've had these people with you for over 30 years, all of a sudden it just really sinks home to me when I was born.
Trust me, it sinks home to me too, because there's people who have known me since I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've grown up with some of these, you know, franchise owners and their teams as well. And it's, you know, it's very gratifying to see, because it's, while, you know, my family is the one that still owns Sea-Tow, operates Sea-Tow, it's really a team effort. You know, it's a synergy between us and our franchise network, and all of us have to do well together to make this successful. And we're a very close network. It was just Mother's Day. One of our franchise owners literally calls my mother on Mother's Day every year, because she is the mother of all Sea-Tows.
Aww.
And wishes her a happy Mother's Day every year. You know, like, it, we're just one, we're a big family that all works together to, you know, to do what we can, to get out there. And I think that's something else where everyone, since everyone's passionate about what they do, we all have a different connection. And you have a friend in every port. Just like we're all family members, we consider our members family members as well.
Well, and have you noticed an increase in female boaters over the past 10 years?
Absolutely. You know, most of our memberships are still in men's names, but we do find that it's the women making the decision. We've seen a lot more women taking the helm and really wanting to understand boating. Seen a lot more women just saying, I'm buying my own boat. They're single and they're saying, I'm just buying this and I want this. I've definitely seen a lot more women joining boat clubs, because they feel it gives them a comfort level of going in. You know, so it's nice to see that. It's, you know, we continue to strive to find as many female captains in our network as possible, and it is very challenging.
Yeah.
We've got some tremendous women captains. Our franchise owner down in Sea-Tow, Sebastian, both her and her husband are licensed captains and both operate the vessels. Same thing with Sea-Tow Smith Mountain Lake. We've got some strong women captains in other locations, but it's very hard. I wish there were more female captains just in the industry in general, but it's happening slowly.
Well, I think, you know, it's the same as you were talking about the awareness of safety. I think that the more that you talk about these things and the more that you, you know, say it's okay and express mm-hmm. that to the people out there and show that women can be powerful within the maritime industry as a whole, that you're going to see that increase. And obviously you already are. And it's just a matter of continuing that. And that's great news. And I understand too that a greater percentage of the staff at your head office is actually female.
Absolutely. You know, again, we're all about hiring the right person for the job, regardless of gender, but it seems like the right person has been women very often for us. Our corporate headquarters, most of our departments are actually headed up by women. Our finance team, our marketing team, our customer care center and call centers, completely women led. Our Sea-Tow Foundation is women led. Obviously I'm president of the company. You know, we have, within our IT team, I like to say we have a trailblazer. One of the women on our IT team, Kathy, has been a coder. You know, she was a trailblazer in that. She's, you know, a little bit older. she's not a 25-year-old, so, you know, yeah. You think of like those tech guys. And, you know, she's done a tremendous job for us in the past 15 years. You know, we found that having a lot of women on our team just works really well, and women are very efficient and bring a different mindset to it. You know, at the same token, we obviously enjoy working with the men on our team also.
Yes, of course.
They play a critical role. It just seems like that, you know, we've been very lucky to have a very strong team of women.
Well, it's nice to see. It's nice to see, because, you know, in the maritime industry as a whole, I think that it does tend to be much more male dominated. That is changing slowly, obviously, in the boating industry in the US, it's changing much more quickly than in the shipping industry, the commercial shipping industry, and the larger yachting industry. But I think, you know, the more that we say it's okay, it's you know, there's nothing wrong with it and you can do it, we will see an increase.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one, you can do it, and two, feel comfortable coming in. And I definitely have seen a change in the marine industry in the US in the past 10 years of women really feeling more comfortable coming into the industry. I'll admit it was very different 20, 30 years ago.
Yes.
You know, and there's a lot of times it's like I was just dismissed just because I was female, and I'm like, no, I actually know what I'm talking about. But there definitely is a significant change in mentality. And I think that the industry has been much more open to a diverse workforce. And we've seen a tremendous number of more women join the industry. I will also say we've seen a lot more diversity in the industry also, which is nice in the US. We need diversity, not just by gender, but diversity in general.
Yeah.
And that is happening. And that's really positive to see.
Well, you know what? I mean, things can only get better, really. You know, I was on social media again. I spend all my life on social media. obviously, that's my business. But, you know, again, today, there was, you know, a massive argument on a yachting site. And it just, I mean, there was actually insults thrown, and the topic was diversity. It started with diversity. Why isn't the industry more diverse? And oh, it went off. And I thought, why is that? You know, someone's asking an honest question. They're coming from a place of vulnerability. They're wanting an answer and they want it to change. So how is it going to change if the minute somebody asks that question, and this person themselves was diverse? So how is that going to change when they're attacked the minute they ask the question? I hate seeing that. You know, I really hate seeing that. I think it's asinine. And social media, I think, probably has taken back diversity and equality by a few years, for the simple fact that you've got the keyboard warriors that are not afraid, because they're behind a keyboard and they'll say whatever they want to say without the consequences of having to look somebody in the actual eye and say what they're thinking.
Unfortunately, I think that's true. And that happens, you know, across the board. Keyboard warriors, that's a good one. I call them keyboard cowboys. Keyboard warriors is a good one. you know, I think what I love about the marine industry in the US is, again, you know, I keep using the word family, but
yeah.
There's definitely a much more open and welcoming and accepting environment in the past, you know, 10, 15 years in the industry, realizing that, hey, we've got a huge market as the demographics of the United States have changed. So does the demographics of boating need to change? I personally haven't experienced that. I've seen people being very welcoming to everyone in the industry and encouraging people to join. And some of that is we have to further promote at companies that we have a diverse workforce so that people can see themselves in the workforce.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, you know, just like we've been working, you know, to say, hey, let's highlight some of the women in the industry so people can see themselves in the industry. We need to highlight our whole team. And I've seen a lot of the marine industry in the US doing that. And you see it changing now when you go to boat shows and who you're speaking with. And it's a good thing to see.
Well, I mean, marketing purely straight across the board. When you think about it, you know, you've got six magazines out in front of you. Not that I don't even look at magazines anymore,
because
it's usually your phone, but, you know, or the television screen or whatever, you know, a movie poster. If it doesn't represent you, it doesn't automatically draw you in. And I think that has probably been the biggest issue. And one of the things that I constantly fight about, you know, we're not talking back 30 years ago when, you know, it was tiny little blondes with 60-year-old men. That's done now. It's families, it's diversity, it's equality. You know, show a family on a boat. You know, dad may be 50 pounds overweight and mom may, you know, have had four kids and she's not wearing sport and a tiny little bikini. You know, the kids, one could be tall and one could be short and, you know, one could have a back brace. You know, I mean, we have to say that this is okay. And it's, we have to appeal to everybody, I think. And we do that through our marketing. And that's the only way. If you see yourself reflected in the marketing, you know that somebody is trying to reach out to you and to say, this is for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I do see that happening a tremendous amount. That's, it, you know, it's a discussion point of, hey, you know, within the industry of, hey, let's look at our photography. Let's look at our communications. We need to represent everyone who's in the boating industry.
Yeah.
And make everyone feel as welcome. Because like I said, you can walk down the dock and everyone's your friend.
Yeah.
So once you're in boating, you're in boating. Like you're part of the crew. And I think that within the United States, that's something that the industry is trying very hard to do.
Well, you know what, Kristen, it's been just such a pleasure to talk to you because it's lovely to speak to not only a woman in the industry, a woman who is president of such a large company. That gives hope to all of you women out there. there is space for you. But just to see how much you've accomplished and your family's accomplished and how you do take this foundation so close to heart, you know, the life jackets and the sober driver, the sober skipper program, as well as rewarding those companies that do put safety first. You know, as a company, I think what you're doing is absolutely phenomenal. So congratulations.
Oh. Well, thank you very much for that. We have a team that works very hard to get all these messages out there and to keep CETO in the forefront and moving forward so we can be with people out on the water.
Nice. Well, we're going to provide all of the information for CETO underneath this interview when it airs. Of course, 60% of my listeners, viewers, fans, whatever they call themselves, are in the US. So I'm going to tell you, if you do have a boat, obviously you do, if you're Yachting International Radio, definitely, and you haven't signed up with CETO, I would say definitely sign up with CETO and get yourself protected. Thank you so much for such a positive interview. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has been fun chatting. Anytime.
Yeah. Right. Well, this has been Kristen. Again, she is the president of CETO Services International. Thanks for tuning in, guys. My name is Rhea. I've been your host. We'll see you again next time.